Welcome back to Gluck Radio. I am Dr. Errol Gluck, executive life coach and master problem solver. With us today, we are proud and glad to have Drake Eastern. He's a member of multiple hypnotherapy and psychological organizations worldwide. Drake is a member of the National Federation of Hypnotists, a former board member of the Colorado Association of Psychotherapists, and he is a hypnotist to our very own U.S. Olympic cycling team. He and his wife, Lindsay, are the co-founders of the Eastern Hypnotherapy Center and Eastburn Institute of Hypnosis in Colorado. What a name. He is the author of numerous books, including The Power of the Past, No Time to Waste, What is Hypnosis, The Power of Suggestion, and last but not least, The Therapeutic Hypnotist. I get thousands of phone calls asking about what hypnosis is and what it could do for them. Today, Drake and I will do our best to let our listeners know what hypnotism is really all about. Drake, welcome to my show. So, Drake, thank you for coming on to Gluck Radio. It is interesting that you are bringing up a topic that is dear to my heart. I've been doing it for 39 years, and most people are so unaware of what it is. So why don't we start off by tell our audience what is truly hypnosis, therapeutic hypnosis?
Well, great. That's a huge, bigger than it seems. You know, it's almost easier to say what it's not. You know, the truth is that hypnosis is really probably our most common experience of reality. However, we hold it out there as some mysterious thing. A lot of the common definitions of hypnosis are it's a very relaxed state or a profound state of relaxation or a state of heightened suggestibility or heightened awareness or on and on. But most of these definitions are not really definitions of hypnosis at all. They are descriptions of conditions which occur when we are in a state of hypnosis. And the truth is, I've used a definition somewhat. Let me say this. I think the problem is that we want to compartmentalize this thing, and it makes it easier to understand and like that. But the thing with hypnosis is it is way too big to be put in some compartment at this point. I know even Dr. Spiegel came out with a new definition, and I'm not exactly clear what that is, but I still don't think it's something that's easily.
So Drake, I'm going to give you the Gluck definition, okay?
Okay.
And tell me and tell me how you like it. Okay. Hypnosis, real clinical hypnosis, is based upon the science of neuroplasticity, which means that the brain changes. You know, it actually changes with the different type of information that is put into it when a person is in a very relaxed state. And quite simply, if we separate the brain into three parts, the frontal lobe, the logical, rational, cognitive brain, the midbrain, the mammal brain that is that we're born with, that has emotions and is intuitively insecure and a little bit OCD and generates a lot of fears, and the reptilian brain that just gravitates towards pleasure and away from pain. And since, as Einstein said, he only used 6% of the frontal lobe, the idea of the neuroplasticity is to get the rational mind to have dominance over the self-destructive emotional brain. Do you like that?
I like that.
Me too.
I'm not sure the general public is going to jump on that one. But well,
you know what?
I like that.
They probably will, Drake. You know why? Because at the end of the day, so many people who are living dysfunctional lives, and when you point it out to them, you know what they say? I know that. I know that. You shouldn't use drugs. I know that. You shouldn't, you know, scream at your kids. I know that. So what they know doesn't mean that they're able to create dominance over that emotion that causes them to do just the opposite. But with neuroplasticity, you could change the brain So they do have dominance.
Well, that's right. And that's where hypnosis really reigns king, because we can make these changes rather quickly. If a person tries to do that through willpower, it's a pretty difficult thing to do. But through hypnosis, we can make the changes rather quickly. And we do have that neuroplasticity. And like you're saying, our intellectual part knows what's wrong. It knows what needs to change. It knows we're eating the wrong food or we shouldn't be doing this or that. But the subconscious doesn't care. It just likes to do the same thing over and over and over again. And it really doesn't care if what it's doing over and over again is good for you or not. It just goes, like you say, to the pleasure part of it. And it doesn't really care if it's helping you or not.
Exactly, Drake. And if the person doesn't know, then that's where hypnosis is combined with rational cognitive coaching, where you could give the person the directions and make sure that they intellectually understand it and then reinforce it through the hypnosis. So yes. tell our audience about some common misconceptions about hypnosis.
Because
they look at stage hypnosis and they think that's hypnosis. So go for it, Drake.
Yes, you know, and we watch stage hypnosis, and I've been trained in stage hypnosis, and it part of the job of that stage hypnotist is to make it look amazing and fascinating and to look like the hypnotist is the one in control. But the biggest skill that a stage hypnotist has, I would say, is picking out the right kinds of people to be up there, and then these people are more inclined to go along with what he says. Also, in hypnosis, there is, especially in a stage setting, there is that inclination to go along with what the hypnotist says because we don't know what else to do. You know, even though we want to be up there and have fun, and we do have control, there's a fear of doing the wrong thing, so we just tend to go along with what we're told to do.
And that, when you said, Drake, is so true. They know how to pick out who's going to follow, which is why very few Jews make good, you know, hit. They make very poor stage because they don't follow anyone. Okay, so stay, if you're Jewish, stay away from stage hypnosis. You'll turn around and say, "I'm not doing that." Okay, all right. So, well, so that's good. I'm glad you pointed it out. Give me more misconceptions.
That is true, and I actually I don't think I'd considered that before.
now you know.
Pretty good.
Don't try to hypnotize a Jew on the stage.
Yeah. I would say, you know, if I'm up there and I'm picking out people to be up on stage, I want the guy who's the life of the party type of person. I want the guy who at a party will stand on his head in the corner and drink a beer through his nose. Because when you get him up on stage and you tell him to do something crazy, he's going to do it because that's part of his nature. And to the other people in the audience, they're going, "Oh my God, you wouldn't catch me doing that." And that's right. That's why they're up there on stage.
That's why they're not picked. Okay, so let us, by the way, say, I want to say, put this layout, stage hypnosis has nothing to do with true clinical hypnosis based on neuroplasticity, which the more intelligent you are, the more independent you are, actually the easier it is. I have not found in 39 years anyone who could not be hypnotized. But give me some more misconceptions, because you did great on that one.
Well, yeah, and I think you're right on. You know, we've always said that, you know, having an IQ above 70 is important. And there's research going back to the 1930s that really shows that having a high IQ is more beneficial. And a lot of people, that's one of their misconceptions, that only, you know, slow-minded people can be hypnotized. And that's just not the case at all. Intelligent people make really good.
Exactly. Exactly. Coaching. And that's why I do executive life coaching with intelligent people. And just for those who don't know, the IQ of 70 is that of basically someone who's semi-retarded. So if you are not mentally, you know, born with your brain spaghettiized, then your IQ is going to be somewhere between 90 and 105. That's the average range.
That's right. In fact, I was doing a group of smokers last night, and that's always kind of part of my talk when I'm getting them primed. And people go, "Well, I don't know what my IQ is." And I says, "If you're not furniture, you got an IQ above 70.
Exactly. If you know your name and address and can say it forwards and backwards, your IQ is good enough.
Yes. And I never hold it to any of those kind of markers because, I mean, I've had worked with patients who were Down syndrome and things like that, and they still responded quite well to the hypnosis. So I never say, you know, draw a line somewhere because you don't know what's going to happen.
Just don't try it with catatonic people. How about the people who are afraid that they're going to be stuck in a trance or do something they don't want to do? What would you say to
that? Yeah. You know what? When I was a little kid, and this was probably like 1952 or 53 or something like that, and I talk about it in one of my books, but I was watching a TV show about hypnosis, and actually it was a pretty good show, as I recall. I mean, I was pretty young at the time, but there was some good stuff about hypnosis. And then at the end of the show, just they were reaching the end, they had this guy in hypnosis, and then the hypnotist counted him out, and he didn't come out, and there was this little panicky moment, and then the show ended, which was kind of the way they did things in the 50s. But what it left you with was the thought that, oh, God, this guy's stuck in hypnosis. He's never going to come out. And a lot of that came from the Esdell state because to get somebody, when somebody's in that Esdell state, it feels so good, they don't want to come out. Mm-hmm. And if you're not real assertive in your bringing them out of trance, then they'll just stay there. And but yeah, if you left them there and didn't do anything, they'd come out of trance.
Right, and that's what we want to emphasize, that it is so relaxing that people love to relax and be free from pain, but eventually, no matter what, they would come out and not be free from pain. And let's address the second issue about them doing something they wouldn't normally do.
Well, there you, and that's one that I always hit on whenever I'm hypnotizing someone is always tell them, I can't make you do things. People think I can make you go rob the bank and bring me the money, and Lord knows, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now. I'd be sitting on a beach somewhere sucking down a mice out here or something, but people just won't do anything that's not of their normal moral ethical qualities.
Right, right. And for those who don't know, real hypnosis, the person is, in a sense, intensely conscious as opposed to not conscious at all. But what they are is they're focused.
And what, yes,
and that's an important point to for people to realize.
And it is good. And a lot of times that is a definition people use for hypnosis is a state of focused concentration. Now, I used to think that concentration meant you were doing this real hard thinking, trying to conjure something or whatever, and some milk's coming out of your ears as the wheels come grinding around. But really, focused concentration is a relaxed experience. You know, and in this relaxed experience, you have greater access to your data banks, the memory, and all that sort of thing. So it's not a struggle. It's not a job. It's something that you relax and these things come to you naturally.
Absolutely. So in your practice, I mean, I'm in practice here in New York City for 39 years, and I combine it with executive life coach, and I treat everyone, but I do treat a lot of executives. And the executives have their own personal problems, whether it's temperament or alcohol or drugs or anxiety or fear. You know, everyone has the same issues in life. But where you are, you live in Colorado, right?
Right.
In Colorado. Right. My daughter went to Denver, Boulder. You know, so you live in a great part of the country. What do you find that, who are the people who come to you? What do you treat the most? And,
you know,
and how long have you been doing this?
Oh, 30-some years, yeah. Yeah, you know what? I'm kind of like you. I'm a GP, but there are certain things, you know, I used to do smokers a lot, you know, but now that's tapering off a bit. Now you get more and more weight clients. But the thing that I noticed more lately is anxiety and stress is a big thing. And I think it relates to our lifestyles and like that. But I've been getting a lot more of that sort of thing. Also, you know, things like...
And if you're doing anxiety and stress in Colorado, what do you think I'm doing anxiety and stresses in New York? You got the Rocky Mountains. I just got rocky clients.
Well, you know, maybe the tolerance level for it is better in New York. They've got systematic desensitization right there all the time.
Now, I'm only kidding. In fact, you know, the old saying, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. New Yorkers are tough... amazing people. Actually, as far as I'm concerned, the best people in the world. But Colorado, there's stress too. So what do you find most people stress about, and what do you do for them with hypnosis, and how do you bring them into that state of hypnosis?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good one. Well, and I think, you know, even though the economy is improving, I think a lot of people are still suffering from that. And, you know, getting their lives back to normal. And I was just teaching a stress class on Tuesday. And that was one of the things we were talking about. You know, used to be you go to work for a General Electric or a phone company or somebody, and you had a job for 30 years. You were going to get a nice retirement and a gold watch at the end and like that. And dad worked for them for 30 years and your grandfather. But now we can't count on those things. There's all these buyouts and things, and you know, what used to be very secure, not so much anymore. So people have stresses that weren't there before. Plus, things are just changing so fast in this world. And we are human beings are highly adaptable creatures. But basically, we're working off of genes from a hunter-gatherer type of individual. And each time we go through changes. We live in a culture where we drive cars, we go to jobs, we run computers, we fly airplanes. But every time we adapt to these things, it's putting another layer of stress on there. Also, I see people who, you know, were doing well, and then they have children, and all of a sudden they can't cope with certain life situations. And it's not that they don't want the kids. It is that level of responsibility was the straw, the extra straw on the camel's back, and now all of a sudden these symptoms begin to arise, and they have anxiety.
I mean, that's so true, Jake. And I would tell anyone, before they get married, before they have kids, get some good coaching, because some people should wait before they get married, and some people should realize they're not with the right person, and having a child is a huge responsibility. So get some skills before you go out and do it, because the only victim is going to be the kid.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I've also been working with a lot of athletes, and actually I worked with last Olympics. I worked with all the male cyclists on the U.S. Olympic team and one of the female cyclists. And I work with all kinds of other athletes too. And it's a nice group to work with because they're highly motivated. You know,
now tell me about the cyclists. What did you put in their head?
Oh, it depends on, you know, each individual, you know, needs something different. You know, one fellow I had, he was at the Tour de Georgia, and he was in a bad crash and had a closed head trauma. He was in a coma for a few days. And he's somebody I'd worked with previously, but then he was here at Craig Rehabilitation Center, and then he was coming to see me, and then he went on from there to become the national cycling champion. And he swears that I'm the thing that made his life come together there. And so, you know, there's all kinds of things. Sometimes, you know, we expect these competitors to have some adrenaline and all that excitement and everything when you're competing, but it can almost get to be too much, and it's a lot of times they will miss an opportunity, especially with cyclists. There's a lot of times there's just this brief window when you could make a surge and you could get ahead of the pack and break away and go for the win. But if you're too stimulated, you might miss that opportunity or make a mistake, and then there you are. You didn't make it.
Yeah, I mean, the truth of the matter, it is so important for athletes. In our practice, I deal with a lot of professional golfers from the PGA and a lot of golfers who are corporate, and it makes, because golf is once you have the techniques, it's 99% mental. So it is incredibly effective. But Drake, I want you to get back to the question so people understand, how do you actually put the person, what's the process that you use to put them in a state where your suggestions become integrated into their behavior?
Wow. Well, you know, I use some fairly typical kinds of induction methods. Lately, I find myself, you know, I used to do tons and tons of regression, and I still like regression, but I find more and more now I'm working in that Esdell state. It really, people get in that state and they really feel hypnotized. They really feel something is happening, and that in itself becomes a convincer. You know, if you feel hypnotized,
let's go back, Drake. How do you get them in that state? What are they doing? Standing on their heads, laying down, you know, sucking their thumb. What are they doing?
They got a nice big comfortable recliner that they're stressed out in.
So they're stressed out in the recliner.
Part of the work right there. You get them nice and comfortable, then you don't have to work so hard.
Okay. And then?
Yeah. And then basically I just talk to them. I'll do like an Elman arm drop and things like that, but mostly it's just me talking to them and they follow some simple instructions. But I really like it when I'm the one doing the work, or at least putting that across as me doing the work, because people like to be taken care of. They like to not have responsibility. And if you say, well, just if you can close your eyes, I can take care of this from here. And then they just sort of resign themselves to, this is going to happen. And so they just go along with it. And it works really well.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think we should underline that once a person trusts you, and once a person admits that there's some part of their behavioral dynamic that is contrary to the way they want to live or express themselves, by turning themselves over to the practitioner only in the areas, only in that which they want to change, makes it much easier for the practitioner and much more relaxing for the client.
Absolutely. Yes. We want the client to know that they have control, but we also want them to kind of give up that control to me to some extent, and so that they can really relax and just enjoy the process. And mostly, it is a very enjoyable process.
Yeah, no, I find that it's always enjoyable, because what happens is, you know, we ask prior, what are your concerns and fears, and make sure that in the hypnosis process, we reinforce that they're not going to be manifest during that process.
Right.
So tell us about your center. How long have you had it? What are some of the things you specialize in besides smoking? And I want you to talk a little bit about weight. What do you do for weight control? But tell me about your center.
Well, I do a lot of stuff for weight control, and I have some ongoing classes that I do at Colorado Free University, where I'm always working with weight groups there. But I do weight groups here as well as working with individuals. I have a book called Notes Based also, and it includes a 6-CD set that leads somebody through the whole hypnotic weight loss process. And the thing is, weight, it's become a huge issue. It's becoming huge all the time. Here in Colorado, we have a 20% obesity rate, which is the lowest in the nation. However,
it's the lowest in the nation.
Yes. 15 years ago, that would have made us the heaviest.
Now John
is dead wrong.
John is 20 pounds underweight, and he wants to know what you could do to help him put on weight. What would you tell him?
Well, I could do some things. I don't know, maybe it's his eating habits. Maybe he has a fast metabolism. But
oh, no, he's lazy.
He's lazy. Poor John gets picked on a little bit. No, there's a there's plenty of things we could do.
Let's actually go back to losing weight, because most people want to lose weight.
Absolutely.
Do you work with them in terms of their what they eat? Do you work with them in terms of their habits? Do you work with them in terms of not liking the things they like ice cream and pizza? What do you actually do?
You know, any one of those things could come into play. I don't put people on a diet. What I look at is what things are they doing every day that's working against them, and then we'll look at those things. And, you find most people, they're going to be attracted to carbs or fats or sugars or things like that, and, you know, it just doesn't work. I look out my back window here at the office, and outside there's a Dairy Queen. There's a couple of pizza joints and a bar and a couple of
You're really bands. You're really nice centrally located, I got to tell you.
And it's like you could throw a rock and hit about 8 bad choices without ever leaving the parking lot here. And that's one of the things we're up against, is that it's so easy for people to make a bad choice because we're just surrounded with them. And it takes a little more effort to make a good choice. But when we and our subconscious doesn't care. It just, like we were saying before, it just likes to do the same thing over and over. And if you've been going to fast food twice a day, it's just going to keep doing that. And those are the kinds of things that I'm going to focus on, getting off the sodas, getting away from the fast food, you know, eating more regular times. And one of the most important things is appetite recognition. You know, when have I had enough? Because we all learned, most of us learned as kids, to clean our plate. And so we learned to
I got to be honest with you, Drake, that's our generation, not the younger generation. Drake, you're probably my age, you know, so meaning the younger generation is not told to clean their plate. They're just told nothing.
Yeah. I got some pretty strict instructions a couple of times in my childhood.
Had to clean your plate?
Yeah. And it was always a healthy, balanced meal. But that was just my mom. I give her credit.
Well, good for her.
Go for John's mom. Yes.
But the younger ones, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right.
How long would it generally take if you had a client to change the way they see food, the way they look at food, and what kind of weight loss should the average male or female client expect to lose if they came to your center?
Wow. Well, it varies a lot from individual or individual. Most of my clients for weight I see for 4 sessions. Some I see for more. Now, the groups that I do at Colorado Free University are 3 sessions, an evening session, you know, a week apart each time. Now, one gal in there, she got a hold of me after the class and sent me a testimonial, actually, that she had lost over 100 pounds.
Was she the girl you were telling me about in the bus accident?
No. That was a gal from Chihuahua, Mexico.
No, great. So 100 pounds in how long?
You know, she didn't say exactly how long it took, but she said it did change her habits and
good.
She got rid of
this is the beauty, and I need to tell, you know, everyone who's listening to us all over the world, here's the truth about if you know what you're doing with hypnosis. Now, I'm going to say 2 things, and Drake, I want you to really respond to this. One is, even though you could learn, because the both of us are probably certified instructors, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have a certain personality and ability to relate to people and a lot of confidence. And 2, you have to have a lot of experience before you're really going to get good. But if you do that, you're going to be able to change lives in hours and not years. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm. You bet. That experience builds confidence. Confidence is infectious. You know, if you're confident and you're confident that you can do this, then that your clients also become confident, and they will surrender themselves to it. It's part of the waking hypnosis that makes all this work. And I tell my students over and over, if I can give you anything, it's confidence. if I can drill anything into you, because, and if you don't feel confident, act confident, because it's going to help you. And as you have success and you get better and better, then your confidence builds and away you go. And that's a lot of the waking hypnosis that really makes all this effective.
So it's kind of like fake it till you make it, but your brain will actually make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. I like that.
Is there any type of people who you won't treat?
Well, you know, there are some psychological issues we don't work with. You know, somebody who is psychotic, you know, is just... And I have worked with some schizophrenics, but I've only done it under the direction of a psychiatrist, and actually had some pretty amazing results. But for the most part, as hypnotists, we wouldn't work with somebody who was a schizophrenic or had any of those major kind of issues.
So that means you would not treat any psychiatrist.
That could be.
Just trying to clarify.
Yeah. We do all have our issues. But you know, I work with most everything. Yeah, and I had a gal last week for uncontrollable crying, and she walked into my office and sat down. We started talking. I knew what was going to happen. I said, "So, you have an issue with uncontrollable crying, is that right?" And of course, she just bursted into tears, which is exactly what I thought was going to happen.
Was that before or after you showed her your bill?
Yeah, I think she was pleased with the bill.
Oh, she was pleased with the bill. So she had uncontrollable climbing. And what was her issue, by the way? What did this stem from pathologically?
Well, she did not know. I mean, there were some things that happened maybe in her childhood that might have triggered it. And all I really did was put her in an Esdale state and talk to her subconscious. And when she left, she never cried. Now, it could be I might still end up doing a regression or something with her. But, you know, really, when the mind learns a new pathway, it just kind of keeps going that way. And there's a little example I like to use, or a little paradigm, that I go, you know, if you get up every morning and you leave the house, and you head down the same path every day. Now, that path, it could be the path of a smoker. It could be the path of a junk fooder. It could be the path of a phobia or whatever. But because that path is there, and we could think of that as a neural pathway, because that path is there, we just keep going the same way. But one night, you get up, and in the morning, you step out, and there's been a huge snowstorm, and there's no path visible in any direction. The path, or at least the path that you've normally taken, is gone. But during the night, you, with the help of your friendly hypnotist, have dug a path off this direction, a path of new behavior, and it's very easy to just take that new path. And once you start going down that path, the mind learns a new habit, and then it keeps doing that thing over and over again. And that old thing is a thing of the past.
And one of the things that I would tell people out there, because people need to understand this, you need a tremendous amount of experience. So before you go to see someone, you make sure, check them out, make sure they have the years of experience and hours and training and success, because being in the hands of someone who's not professional is going to just make you more discouraged.
Yes. I have to agree. That's probably the most important thing to look for. You know, some people might go, well, this person's a medical doctor or this or that. But what you want to look at, how often do they see clients?
Oh, exactly. You
want to go to somebody who does hypnosis day in and day out. That's the person who's going to be the most confident and going to be able to get you where you need to go. If it's somebody who just sees the occasional hypnosis client, and in the meantime, they're doing something else, that's not going to be your best choice.
Absolutely. The MD doesn't mean anything if he's got only 45 hours as opposed to 45,000 hours.
Right, right. And it's like, you know, it's like, you want to go to an engineer to have your car fixed who's never opened the hood of a car, but he's got a degree. Or do you want to go to a guy that's all greasy and he's been under cars every day of his life for 20 years? You know, that's the guy that's going to fix your car for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you and your wife run this center together. Is she also a hypnotist?
Yeah, she is. And she's actually a really brilliant girl. I'm lucky to be with her. And she mainly
now,
is
only she standing sees near, clients. Is she standing near you when you're saying this? I mean, what's...
No.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure that, you know, because I heard she had a shotgun. So I just wanted to make sure that she's not near you.
That's a good point. Now, she mainly works in the area of fertility, and she's quite well known for the work. She's trained people all over the world to work in using her methods to work with fertility. She has clients from all over the world. You know, right now she's probably at home doing Skype sessions because she has clients in Japan and Israel and South America and India.
Which are 2 points, by the way, I want everybody to know. Hypnosis could be done from anywhere in the world. It's good if they're in your office, but, you know, it could be done from anywhere. The second, for those of you who are shaking your head and say, what does hypnosis have to do for fertility? Very often, fertility or the lack thereof is based upon stress and anxiety. And when you can reduce that and relax the person and make them not tense, there's a greater chance of fertilization.
That's exactly right. My wife's saying is you can't left brain a baby.
I thought they said that about Trump. Let's not get political here because John is our political commentator.
I do a lot of Skype sessions.
What was that? No, he said no political comment, you know. He's a very passive anarchist. He just doesn't like to say very much.
That's true.
Do you get a chance to speak a lot at different engagements? Like the National Guild, they have their yearly in the summer, usually their yearly engagements. Do you take advantage of that?
I usually speak at the NJH conventions, and I've been at the Solid Gold and Mid-American Convention in Chicago. I spent all day, Monday or Tuesday, I spent all day at a high school out in Parker, Colorado, and I must have talked to 300 students that day, and I just did one psych class after another, and they have me out there a couple times a year to do that. And then the week before I was at Chatfield High School doing the same thing. And I speak at Regis University quite often for psych classes and things like that. And and I speak for different groups. I go to like optimist groups and things like that and speak. And actually overseas, Lindsay and I have taught in Europe number of times, and Australia and the Caribbean and Canada. And
you've been around the block, guy.
Yeah.
You know, did you ever speak at the psychic convention where they don't tell you where they are?
No, I missed that.
Yeah, access. You've missed that one. I'll probably see you at NGH. I think I'm going to be speaking there. But I want to tell you, you've been an amazing guest. And doing great work, and your wife is doing great work, and we hope that we get listeners, literally tons of them from all around the world, and I hope they come and see you. And you sound like just a really nice guy. I look forward when I go to Colorado for us to grab some lunch or a drink or
a drink and
breakfast or whatever.
I like that.
Drake, have a great day. And thanks for the show.
Okay, great. And it's been a real fun time talking with you, and maybe we can do this again sometime.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon, Drake.
Thanks, Drake.
Thank you.
I want to again thank Drake Eastberg for joining us. He was such a pleasure. Now, here's what you need to do. Pick up a copy of his books at Amazon.com. You could also and should check out his website at HypnoDenver.com. I am Dr. Errol Gluck. Remember, to every problem, there is a solution. I'm your problem solver. You're going to want to check out our other episodes on GluckRadio.com. Go to my website, GluckSolutions.com. Go to YouTube by searching for Errol Gluck. Join us on Facebook. Let us know what you know, what you think. Let us know what you think. And if you're interested in doing a show or sponsoring a show, we have tremendous listenership. We have something for everyone to change their life. The combination of hypnosis and executive life coaching, which I've been doing for 35 plus years, will change your life in hours, not years. Thanks for listening. Till next time, have a great day.